It's nice to be home. Part of the reason that I can, you know, go from one place to another, I'm usually asleep half the time when I'm doing that. But I am very glad to be back home. I really wrestled over, I wrote a lot of things down, changed them, folded them up, put them away, and I came back to this one thing that's been on my mind for a long time. And it's something I'm going to try and do a job to try and explain what I understand about one of the prophecies in Zechariah. And in the very last verse of the 13th chapter, and then beginning with the first verse of the 14th chapter. So I want to talk about this, and the reason is because it has such a bearing on things that are going on. There are things that are written here that I think we can see a forerunner of some of the things that are here, just because of what the way the world is today. One of the reasons sometimes that we have a hard time when we look at prophecy, because almost all prophecy is two stories told at the same time. They combine what's going to happen to the good and what's going to happen to the bad. And sometimes it's really kind of easy to get them mixed up. And I think that's true and almost just always true in almost all of prophecy, because that's kind of the way the Lord, he goes back and forth and explains one thing that's going to happen, and then it would be easy to think, well, that's going to happen to the good people and everyone in the world. But really, what he's telling you, this is what's going to happen to those who are not serving God. And then another line that's talking about what's going to happen to those who are, and what they have to look forward to. So to illustrate that, you know, I want to go to this last verse of the 13th chapter of the book of Zechariah. And this says this. Now this is, of course, now in verse 7 here, you know, I'm not going to tell you that I understand everything here, but really this is, you know, that place where Jesus said, you know, that the shepherd would be smitten and the sheep scattered. So we know that, you know, that there, this is something, it looks like it's transpiring after the crucifixion of Christ. It's sometime in the future. God is going to do something with Israel. He's going to do something with the church. And I think we have to, when we're looking at Israel, we need to often include the church in this idea of what the Lord is going to do. Because the church is Israel, but he has his covenant that he has made also with Abraham that he's going to fulfill, and he's still fulfilling it. But let's read this ninth verse. The ninth verse says, "And I'll bring the third part through the fire," talking about his people. "And will refine them as silver is refined, and will try them as gold is tried. They shall call on my name, and I will hear them. I will say, it is my people, and they shall say, the Lord is my God." So what we're seeing here is that God, it's just a small little blurb of what God does. Everything that he's, one of the things that I learned in the experiences of myself with the Spirit of God is that everything God does is so perfectly aligned. Perfectly aligned. If you look at nature itself, it just fits like a glove. One thing fits into the other thing, and everything that happens in the forest gets used for something. There's nothing there that's really vain. You know, the things that happen in nature, God has this plan, how it takes care of itself. And we're part of this plan of nature taking care of itself. So he's going to take Israel. He's going to refine them. He's bringing them down, which makes me think about us, that God has brought us. He's also brought us down to this point in history, in the world, and where we are exactly, I'm not willing to stick my neck out all the way. But here we are. God brings us down. And one of the things that I have learned is oftentimes the Lord calls a people, men and women, he calls them, he's prepared them for their day, to work in their day. And so that's how I look at you. That's how I look at the church. That's how I look at Israel, what's transpiring in the nations and around the world, and what's transpiring in the house of Israel itself, that God is making people for this moment, for this day, for this particular hour in history. God has his plan. It's so intricate and includes millions of souls of people. Now, we go on to chapter 14, and we read this first verse to show exactly the opposite. Now, let's just read it, and I'll see if I can explain it to you the best of my ability. I'm not claiming that I understand everything, but some of the things that I've read, I just think I understand what it's saying here. It says, "Behold, the day of the Lord cometh." Now, this is a thing, you know, people are dreading, you know. People make all kinds of jokes about it, you know, and about the apocalypse and all kinds of things. "The day of the Lord cometh, and thy spoil shall be divided in the midst of thee." Now, is there anything to learn from this? Well, now, according to what I've read, this is simply saying, you know, the day of the Lord is coming, the coming again, you know, and it's going to begin there in Jerusalem, because we're talking about Jerusalem. We're talking about Israel. We're talking about where the Lord is culminating all these things that are transpiring in the world. And the United States and every other nation, somehow we're included in all these plans. But Israel is this key, this rock of offense in the world that is key to bringing about things. So, the day of the Lord is coming, this day when God himself is going to do something. He's going to do something. He's set up all these plans. He's set up the battlefield, the hour, the day, the people. It's all already known to him. And so, the day of the Lord cometh, and thy spoil, speaking about Jerusalem, your spoil shall be divided in the midst of thee. What does this mean? What this means is these people that are coming after Israel, that they are not great military geniuses. That's one of the things it means. It's a confused moment. You know, in the great empires in the past, the emperor and the generals and all these people that had control, and you go in and you take this city, and you're going to take the spoil, and you can take this, you know, as a soldier, and you cannot take this. It was very highly organized, you know, because the emperors and kings, they wanted their prize. And, of course, I'm sure they let them have some. But there's a lot of stuff they wouldn't let the soldiers have. You cannot have that. This is saying it's helter-skelter. It's just every man for himself. Running into the city, going into the city, and the spoil is going to be devoured right there on the spot. They're going to be, it's like when you look in the news and you see these people in smash and grab. Everybody runs, breaks the window, takes their diamond necklace and runs out the door, and nobody even knows who was there. It's this terrible mess. This is the confusion of our day. It's very common. And in war, it's always been common in war. But this is kind of describing. This is what's going to be. It's just totally unorganized. And so let's go on to the next. So it really means, you know, here's the plan of what God has. He has this micromanaged plan that he has, and this other one of chaos that the evil people are going to do. So sometimes this gets really confusing, doesn't it? When you get these things side by side, but it doesn't need to be if we have faith and confidence in God for the day that we live in. It says, "For I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle, and the city shall be taken, and the houses rifled, and the women ravished, and half the city shall go into captivity, and the residue of the people shall not be cut off from the city." Now, I should have done more research in that last phrase. I'm not really sure what that means. But here it says, you know, that the houses rifled, the women ravished, and when October 7th came last year, and I heard what happened, those verses just rang out, those lines rang out of my mind. So they run into a place, they rush in, guns and rockets and firebombs blazing, and they grab a few things here and a few things there. They ravish the women, they steal hostages, and then they run right back out, and they run back over and try and hide on their side of the line. And this is the kind of crazy war that's building up. And the more, there's a lot of nations now, they're trying to talk together, you know, and meeting all the time, every week, trying to make this into some kind of an organized effort. I don't think it'll ever be completely, really organized. It's going to be this mess. And God has planned it this way. When they do their dirty deeds at that end, when this is the battle that's going to happen someday, or series of battles, you know, however long that period lasts, and God is going to make them collapse on themselves. And his people, though, they're the ones that have been prepared for this day. You are being prepared for this day. If you are truly trying to serve God, and you're on your knees every day, and you're into the scriptures, and you're praying, you're trying to do the right thing with the brothers and sisters and your family, doing everything you can to save one another and to help one another, then you know you are part of a family, of something that doesn't have to be disorganized. It could be something where we get together, and you know, I think it's interesting, there's been, you know, some dreams had here about Phoenix, you know, that someday maybe there's going to have to be this week when we're all going to have to get together and say, well, what do you have, you know, what can we use, you know, I mean, it's just something that could very happen, and it wouldn't be out of order. It would be something where we'd be relying, and if you're hungry, I'm going to be hungry, this kind of thing, we're going to do this together somehow. But this other thing, when these people that are just smash and grab and steal and kill and do horrible, horrendous things and take people as hostages and as slaves, that is going to end. It is going to end. God is going to destroy it off the face of the earth. That's how I read the scriptures. And this isn't in verse 3. Then shall the Lord go forth and fight against those nations as when he fought in the day of battle. And there's numerous places where it talks about that, where God promised to do it, where it said that he actually fought, you know, in the day of battle. He made that kind of explanation. You see Joshua 10:14, and there was no day like that day before it or after it that the Lord hearkened unto the voice of a man, and the Lord fought for Israel. A time when they utterly abolished their enemies because God was fighting for them. And these things are in the future, and we still see these. We see where God has helped good nations in times past. But this is something even more special than those things. And Exodus 14:14, the Lord shall fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace. You know, there's something where where God's people, the real, what's happening actually is going to be God himself. He's going to do things. And we know, as we're going to read here on a little farther, things that he's going to do when in the culmination of these things. So there's a lot of talk, you know, about what this is going to include. There's a lot of things, a lot of people who believe, you know, we're looking at some of the stuff in the 24th chapter of Matthew, 21st chapter of Luke, in Joel, the book of Joel, and something like what some of the things that are happening in the prophecies that are in Amos, and something let's see, what's another one? Well, it's just that there are things like God has already done, or he's planning, or maybe what's prophesied in the 38th chapter of Ezekiel, these kind of things. People are looking for this when these nations were going to gather together. And it is interesting to me that Gog and Magog, most people kind of realize that there's like four or five nations over there, you know, from Russia and Turkey and Iran, that are really the three major units of that group of people that most people feel like they're the descendants of those people. So we'll see what happens. But who's making plans? You see in the news, they're getting together, they're playing war games, all these kind of things. But God is going to fight as he fought in the day of battle. And then it says in verse 4, and his feet shall stand in that day upon the Mount of Olives, which is before Jerusalem on the east. And the Mount of Olives shall cleave in the midst thereof toward the east and toward the west. And there shall be a very great valley, and half of the mountain shall remove toward the north, and half of it toward the south. And ye shall flee to the valley of the mountains, for the valley of the mountains shall reach unto Azal. Yea, ye shall flee, like as ye fled from before the earthquake in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah, and the Lord my God shall come, and all saints with thee. So, what is this talking about? You know, it's going to go on here and read more about this. But here we have this Mount of Olives, this symbolic place. It's the huge, ancient cemetery of the ages, of the millennia. That's where it is, Mount of Olives. All the dead people for centuries have been buried there from all kinds of places. But a lot of them were Jews and Israelites buried there. And then again, of course, some of the kings were buried over up against the city of David in the rocks and places like that. But here it is, and where this valley is going to open. And it seems to me like it's probably largely symbolic. I'm just making a guess of resurrecting, you know, the power of the earth. Power of death is broken. And Christ is going to come with his saints and go on. And then it says here in verse 5, and ye shall flee like as ye fled from before the earthquake in the days of Uzziah. Now, from what I understand, no one can really pin this down as to when this was. There's no description of it. Unless maybe if somebody's found one, I sure like to read it. But I don't know where it is, a description of this. But it says, you know, they're going to flee. It doesn't really tell you right there where they're going to flee to. But it later on, I think, was telling us they're going to flee there. They're not going to flee from it. We're going to flee to it. Why? Because Jesus is there. You know, this is going to be the change of attitude, something that's going to be different, that we have a place to go. We have someone to see. We have someone to experience, however that's going to appear in this world, that this great earthquake, you know, and that really means the destabilization, great earthquake, like never was before. That means, you know, all the nations, their governments and everything are rattled. And the day is soon upon them at this point when they will hear things that they had never heard before, etc., etc. And they will hear the gospel. And I believe that it's a time when the church, that, you know, after this, when the church and Israel and all the honest and hard people of the world, they're going to begin to cross paths. Just like, you know, we had this rush here back in the 1990s, we had a rush going to several places in the world. Now it's kind of squelched by the power of the world. So what is God going to do? Well, I'm sure God has a plan to open it all up again. I'm just so certain of it. I may not see it, but I'm just so certain. I have this great view in my heart that, you know, we talk about having a protected border, and it seems to be very necessary because of all that's going on, but I really think off out in the future is the time when there's no borders all over the world. And people will go from sea to sea carrying the gospel, preaching the gospel under the direction of Christ. Wow. I think it's just going to be incomprehensible to the human mind as to what Christ himself is going to cause, because as I said, he has manipulated the world. They think that they manipulated religion, but he has actually manipulated them. He has it all under control. He has a great, great plan. So, and ye shall flee to the valley, well, there's verse 5, ye shall flee to the valley of the mountains. Who? You, Jerusalem, Israel, the church. Why will you go there? So let's just go on a little more and read just a little more to find out why we're going to go there. And it came to pass And it shall come to pass in that day that the light shall not be clear nor dark, but it shall be one day which shall be known to the Lord, not day nor night, but it shall come to pass that at evening time it shall be light. And it shall be in that day that living water shall go out from Jerusalem, half of them toward the former sea, and half of them toward the hinder sea. In summer and in winter shall it be. You know, I don't know what this means. It's kind of interesting to me that this description of this light and dark is a little similar. I don't know whether it's symbolic, but it's a little similar to when the Lord was born on this land. Kind of an interesting thing. Is that the sign of his coming? A night with no darkness. That'd pretty well scare a lot of people, I think. But if we were sort of conditioned for it, we might know. I don't know. That's just a thought. Then it may have some other different meaning. But see, now we're going to go to verse 8. And it shall be in that day, the living water shall go out from Jerusalem, half of them toward the former sea, and half of them toward the hinder sea. In summer and in winter shall it be. So in summer and winter, it's always going to be flowing. God is coming. He split this, you know, figuratively or literally, he split this mountain open, and from it there's a valley, and it runs to the Mediterranean, and it runs to the Red Sea. And in it are living waters. It's interesting, this concept the Jews have, that Jerusalem is the belly button of the world. That's what they say, you know, right in the middle of the world. And here it is. And it's interesting, this little tiny speck of land here that you could drive across in an hour if the road was good. You know, you could drive from the Red Sea over to the Mediterranean in a very short period of time. It's not very far. And so what does that mean, this living waters flowing from sea to sea? Waters entering to the Mediterranean. This is the west, the key to the west, and all of the oceans in the west. And so this water is going to flow into the Mediterranean, figuratively, I believe. But maybe there will be a river just because it's pretty. But flowing into the Mediterranean, and that water touches every continent in the west. And more water flowing into the Red Sea, and that covers every continent in the east. Living waters. Well, I'm ready. I'm ready for that. I hope something beautiful. An unrestricted flow. And as I said, you know, you're going to flee to this valley. And of course, you know, I'm sure that maybe figuratively, there'd be a time in the history of this world in the future where, as it says here, we're going to keep reading, you know, the nations are going to go there. They're going to go there. To see him. In verse 9, and the Lord shall be king over all the earth. In that day shall there be one Lord, and his name one. And the land shall be turned as a plain from Geba to Rimmon. I gotta find, there we go. I'll be back. There we go. Get it away from the microphone. All right. And all the land shall be turned as a plain from Geba to Rimmon, south of Jerusalem, and it shall be lifted up and inhabited in her place from Benjamin's gate unto the place of the first gate, unto the corner gate, and from the tower of Hananel, unto the king's winepress. And men shall dwell in it, and there shall be no more utter destruction, but Jerusalem shall be safely inhabited. What does this mean? Because he's talking about this area. You know, one of the things that's written about Mount Zion, so to speak, this symbolic mountain that's there, it's a mountain in the bottom of a valley. and all the land around about is going to be turned. And what will happen? What does that mean? That means Mount Zion, symbolically, the government of Jesus Christ will be the greatest on the earth. That's what it means. The greatest. And men shall dwell in it, and there shall be no more utter destruction. But Jerusalem shall be safely inhabited. No more destruction. There's a lot to look forward to, really. A lot. Sort of looks like it's just could be on the horizon, you know. I'm not prophesying, but it's just amazing to me what it looks like at this time. What could actually transpire? Because what they think, well, you know, the nations of the world are like, well, I've got this armament ready, I've got all these things, and maybe now's our time to strike, to take Jerusalem, to take the kingdom of God in this symbolic way. You know, taking Jerusalem as they're taking the kingdom of God, and it will utterly fail in the end. And thus shall be the plague wherewith the Lord will smite all the people that have fought against Jerusalem. Their flesh shall consume away while they stand upon their feet, and their eyes shall consume away in their holes, and their tongue shall consume away in their mouth. And it shall come to pass in that day that a great tumult from the Lord shall be among them, and they shall lay hold every one on the hand of his neighbor, and his hand shall rise up against the hand of his neighbor. This time when these people that are ragtag, they're not really unified, they're not based in love and in patience and compassion and trying to take care of little ones and old ones and families and those that need help. They're not thinking about these things. They're thinking about this destruction of the Jews and destruction of the world and this kind of thing. And I don't really know what it means, you know. Some people have surmised, well, that must be talking about nuclear war or something, or, you know, when these things happen and they kill each other, whoever's left, what are they going to feel like? Are they going to feel with fear? Where now, as you see, people are brave and brazen, and they say terrible things about other nations and people and events and things, they say these horrible things, and they burn flags, and they do all this kind of stuff, and they do it publicly, and they yell and scream into cameras. Will that all go away? Where they will be afraid? They're just like going to shrink back. I think that's also possible. But it could be. You know, when this happens, that they're going to lose their minds. Things will happen. People that are totally committed to a way of evil. But others, as I believe, who just really don't know what to do, will probably learn that maybe now there will be peace. And I believe there will be. I think this is something that's coming. Something that's beautiful, something that will be glorious, and the gospel will flow freely into the world and without boundaries. India's not going to stop us. They're going to open the doors. All these kind of things God has planned for his kingdom in that age, in that time period. And it says, "And Judah also shall fight at Jerusalem, and the wealth of all the heathen round about shall be gathered together, gold and silver and apparel in great abundance. And so shall be the plague of the horse and of the mule and of the camel and of the ass and of all the beasts that shall be in these tents as this plague." One of the interesting things is, you know, you find out what David did. The Assyrians, who never officially ever attacked Israel in the day of David, they sent their army. They lent the army to these other people that were fighting against David. And they lent them. And David knew it, of course. And what he did when they brought their horses and their chariots and all this kind of stuff, well, David utterly destroyed them all. He took all the horses and the camels and whatever else that they had there, and hamstringed them or something. You know, he cut the tendon on their legs, so they're totally worthless. completely worthless. They'll never again pull or push. And he did this. He utterly destroyed them. And the Assyrians were weak for 100 years afterwards. And so there's this type of thing that where the Lord takes the armament and he takes the people and he destroys them. And somehow in his great plan, you know, he also was taking care of his people, guarding them, watching over them, beside them, caring for them, and telling them, you know, this is my fight. In the end, we've got to realize it doesn't mean, you know, that as a policeman or as a soldier or something, you wouldn't have to fight, but there's still, we have to keep this in mind. God has a fight. He has a battle to win, and he's preparing that victory even as we speak. And has been for many, many years. He's preparing all these things, getting them ready. Even some of the philosophies, you know, we have to think about that. Even some of the philosophies that I don't necessarily care about. I'm not moved by them. You know, people that, you know, we kind of insultingly call tree huggers. Well, maybe it's not all bad. You know, maybe there's some need for that, you know, and so people are kind of ready. They could even begin to sort of fit into something where the Lord is recovering the land and sending rain in season and all this stuff that he's going to do, because that's what he's going to do. He's going to make the environment right for a certain time, for the kingdom age. What a wonderful thought to keep. Let's see. We are at verse 16. And it shall come to pass that every one that is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall even go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And it shall be that whoso will not come up of all the families of the earth unto Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, even upon them shall be no rain. I guess really, in God's perspective, it's pretty easy to control things. He can do it quite easily if he wants to, but there's going to be some great changes. And if the family of Egypt go not up and come not, that have no rain, there shall be the plague wherewith the Lord will smite the heathen that come not up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. This shall be the punishment of Egypt and the punishment of all the nations that come not up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. In that day shall there be upon the bells of the horses holiness unto the Lord. And the pots of the Lord's house shall be like the bowls before the altar. Yea, every pot in Jerusalem and in Judah shall be holiness unto the Lord of hosts. And all they that sacrifice shall come and take of them and seed therein. And in that day there shall be no more the Canaanite in the house of the Lord of hosts. Now, does that mean that he's picked, you know, a certain race that he's going to exclude? No, it means they're not going to call themselves Canaanites anymore. They're going to be Canaanites there who were born Canaanites. They're going to be there. And every race, kindred, tongue, and people is going to come to the Lord. But there's something, these things, everything means something here. You know, it says that in that day there shall be upon the bells of the horses, even upon, you know, the beasts of burden and things, there's going to be something written, you know, there to make a noise. And then there's this statement, holiness unto the Lord. Well, according to the scripture, that's what's written on the high priest's, you know, hat. Holiness to the Lord. Which means to me, in all these pots, these seed pots and things that were cooked for peace offerings and for the offering of the tabernacles, when the king, that's the Feast of Tabernacles, when we come to welcome the king. That's what it was for, coming to welcome the king. That it means that they're bringing offerings. And they're holy because God has helped us. He's arranged that now they come from our heart, whatever that is. And probably it may not have anything to do with food. It may be what is in your heart, what comes out of your mouth. These things God will help us with in this time. This seems like it has such a fairy tale idea. But it's the one that all others try to imitate. All other fairy tales try to imitate this prophecy, or prophecies like this. Holiness unto the Lord. Where we come to God and without fear, without haste, you know, we're not like haste when they're rushing into Jerusalem to destroy people and kill and steal and then run off or whatever it is they're going to do, or barricade the streets so no one can get at them. This haste where people come and there's no running. There's no fear of running. We're going to God and there's time to meet Him. I look forward to this. My understanding of scriptures is, if I die tomorrow and I have lived my life the way that the Lord pleases the Lord, I will be here. That's my understanding. And any one of you, if you are here, you will be part of it. And I think we should consider these kind of things when we're thinking about, you know, these comparisons of terrible things that are going on, you know, one good, one bad. It's a story of two people. And just something to keep in mind. For God has a marvelous plan for each and every one of us. And we need to get into the scriptures and learn this. And I told a lot of people down there in Mexico, some of those young people, you know, much the vast majority of them hadn't read the Bible or the Book of Mormon. They read parts of it, you know, maybe this is the year to read it from cover to cover. Find out what it's about. Find out what the promises of God and what the conditions are for salvation. Find out for yourself. Read those things and come together and read. And it's, I find that this is such a, that particular exercise of getting together and read, it just always seems to be the thing that we can do over and over and over and over again. And when it comes down to it again, we've done something, we've learned something new every time we do that. We have shared with people who don't understand. We have learned more ourselves and been instructed by other people who understood something differently than we when we sit down and read the scriptures. You know, chapter after chapter, page after page, looking at things that stick out in your mind and asking questions about those things. And God is with this. But I just want to read this scripture that talks about the scriptures in the book of Isaiah, and then I'm finished. Isaiah 1, verse 5 through 8. Through 9, says this, "For it were not possible that our father Lehi could have remembered all these things to have taught them to his children, except it were for the help of these plates. For he having been taught in the language of the Egyptians, therefore he could read these engravings and teach them to his children, that thereby they could teach them to their children, and so fulfilling the commandment of God, even down to this present time." And you know, that includes us. Down to this present time, you can learn what the ancients knew. You can learn, you can be moved by the same power of God that moved these men and women to do incredible things. You can have that same feeling and strength and power when God gives it to you. And you can endure the things that are in your own life. And knowing what the scriptures say is such an important foundation. "I say unto you, my sons, were it not for these things which have been kept and preserved by the hand of God, that we might read and understand of his mysteries and have his commandments always before our eyes, that even our fathers would have dwindled in unbelief. And we should have been like unto our brethren, the Lamanites, which know nothing concerning these things, or even do not believe them when they are taught them, because of the traditions of their fathers, which are not correct. O my sons, I would that you should remember that these sayings are true, and also that these records are true." There is a spirit in this, in the pages of our books. God's Spirit is there. And when you open up your mind and you pray diligently, seeking, God gives you many things that you need. And I just, I hope that this will become a testimony to everyone. Because I know anyone who has experienced this knows it's true. We often get led exactly to what the Lord wants you to know and to understand on that day. So I leave that with you. I hope that there has been something there that you have been able to glean, some hope, some power of God that has reached into your heart, into your mind, and that you will endure and be strong and not let anything deter you from following the gospel of Christ. God bless you.